Here on a special edition Monday with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for Indiana basketball. We'll get to spring football eventually, but this isn't the day for that. I've been gone too long. You've been on the road. Lovely Minnesota, watching Indiana's basketball season come to an end. One that was disappointing in the fact that if you'd have told us before the season started their final game would be in the Big Ten tournament in Minnesota, I don't think that's how any of us predicted the season to be. A furious late season rally, including the first game against Penn State in the Big Ten tournament, had people maybe hoping for a little bit of a miracle run there, but when it was all said and done, Nebraska for the third time to show up. And what a, when people say, well, it's hard to beat a team three times. No, it's not. We witnessed that last weekend, and Indiana goes quietly into the good night. First of all, I read something today that Minnesota, people that in the ice fishing industry, not real happy about what things are going on. How was your weather up there, buddy?
It was great at first, and then by the time I left, it was, I mean, like 20s and wind blowing so hard I could not speak. Not because it was cold, but because it was just pushing too much air in my lungs. So it definitely turned toward winter as the week progressed.
And as today is progressing here on the 18th day of March, the snow flurries that have been bouncing around all afternoon, hopefully will just go away forever. Now that we are all back from spring break, now that we are after St. Patrick's Day, now that the Big Ten tournament has wrapped up, it was a fantastic finish to the end. Indiana continued to be a little bit snake bit by injuries, obviously. Being on vacation, I'm not going to get all of this right, so I know you being courtside, that's why I have you today to help me with all of this. Trey Galloway hurts his knee in the Michigan State game, but Indiana finds a way to win that one. I don't want to go back and review that entire game, but I'm just trying to get my injury timeline correct.
Yeah, that's the way he described it anyway, was that he suffered the injury during the Michigan State game. And then, at least if I was sort of understanding him correctly, he suffered the injury during the Michigan State game, and then essentially kind of in the build-up to the Big Ten tournament, that it just didn't get healthy enough in time, that there were enough kind of setbacks. So,
well, that didn't help anything, because as we talked about before I got away from my island getaway, he was dishing out assists at a very high rate. He was making the offense move. He made Indiana perhaps a little bit more difficult to guard. And then in the first game of the Big Ten tournament, he doesn't play. The second half of the Michigan State game, he didn't play. And Indiana looked like they were finding ways, but in a team filled with imperfections, losing one of their most efficient defenders and creative forces, that just wasn't going to be a sustainable path moving forward. They needed a miracle anyhow, and they just didn't get any help with the injuries.
No, and I mean, you know, I think basically what you needed was Nebraska to show up, not really, you know, locked into the tournament or you know, playing well, particularly scoring well. And obviously they lose to Illinois in the quarterfinal, but let's be fair to them. You know, they scored 180 points across two games in the Big Ten tournament. They made 22 threes in those 2 days. You know, I think they shot well over 50% across those two games. You know, didn't turn the ball over very much. You know, that's, if you believe that Nebraska can make some noise, maybe win its first NCAA tournament game ever, you know, here and whenever they play, when do they play? Do they play Friday against Texas A&M? If you believe that Nebraska can, you know, kind of do something here in the tournament, you're basically buying their offensive upside. And, you know, with or without Trey Galloway, but certainly without him, Indiana needed Nebraska to just not really have that. And, you know, I know sometimes people want stuff to be more reducible or simpler. But for me, watching that game in real time, Nebraska scored 27 more points behind the 3-point line than Indiana did. Nebraska just absolutely trapped the life out of Indiana's bigs, took him out of the game. Certainly when it mattered, you know, and I mean, Malik Renew fouls out. He finishes with 9 points. You know, Khalil Ware didn't have foul trouble, but clearly had trouble getting engaged in the game offensively. He was only 3 of 10 from the floor. But more than that, I thought just, you know, at the point in the game when it was still kind of in the balance, Indiana just didn't have anything for, you know, to be able to match Nebraska offensively. And obviously there's that 17-0 run leading into halftime where, Indiana's down, was it six? And then
33-27, 3:47 to go, something like that, yeah.
And Nebraska just tears off 17 unanswered points, and, you know, that's pretty much that. And so it was – you know, one final reminder of just kind of basically what this team wasn't from a, you know, an offensive standpoint, from a practical standpoint, from an efficiency standpoint. I got so many questions in the build up to the Big Ten tournament, you know, in particular about Indiana's net rating relative to Michigan State was, I think, the school or the team that a lot of IU fans kind of had, you know, stuck in their craw, so to speak. And obviously you understand why a little bit, because Michigan State, they'd just beaten them. And I don't know that that's totally unfair. You know, sort of basically the question was like, why are we in the 90s in the net and they're in the, you know, they're up in the 20s. You know, Michigan State finished with the same regular season record, the same Big Ten record, you know, same postseason record bar. Obviously, they made the NCAA tournament. We can have a debate about that or not. I'm not trying to pick on anybody. I was surprised at a couple of the decisions the committee made, but that's not really what we're here to discuss today. But, I mean, the short answer to the question of what separated Indiana from Michigan State is, number one, Michigan State had some good wins. They beat Baylor. They beat Indiana State. They beat Illinois, they beat Northwestern. You know, if we're just looking at this in raw terms, they beat more teams that either made the NCAA tournament or came close to making the NCAA tournament than Indiana did, or certainly they didn't lose to more. And when you looked at some of their losses, they lost to Nebraska, but they lost by 7. You know, they lost to Arizona, but they lost by 6. They lost to Duke, but they lost by 9. They lost their game at Illinois, but they lost by 3. And this is something we've discussed with Indiana for a while, that, you know, part of the problem here is that the metrics, the computers, the formulas that the committee use as a sorting, not the sorting tool, not you know, it's not the Bible, it's not the one commandment, but it is a key sorting tool, the net numbers, the KenPom numbers, BPI. That stuff doesn't just look at your win-loss record. It looks at how you won or how you lost. And Indiana's wins were often close. You know, Indiana, I'm just looking at their KenPom profile as an example right now. You know, of their first 5 wins, all of them were against teams ranked outside the KenPom top 150. Only one was by double digits. If you look at even some of their best Big Ten wins, you know, they beat Ohio State by a combined 9 points. They beat Iowa by 6. They beat Michigan State by 1. They beat Wisconsin by 4. You know, they beat Maryland by a combined 17. On the other hand, they lost by 28 to Auburn. They lost by 20 to Connecticut. If you count, you know, the Big Ten tournament loss, which ultimately, you know, by that point, their numbers were a little bit baked in. If you count the Big Ten tournament loss, they lost by, I think, a combined 58 points in 3 games to Nebraska. And the point I'm trying to make here is that Nebraska game felt particularly sort of, you know, I don't know. It's dangerous sometimes. Sports writers, we can go looking for meaning and you know, sort of metaphor where such things don't necessarily always exist. But, I mean, Nebraska, you know, kind of with its own performance, it was a nice summation of just kind of what all the various things that held Indiana back on the floor, the inability to score at volume, the inability to, you know, to shoot threes with any volume whatsoever. You go back to Indiana's 3-point shooting. I mean, they only made They only made 9 threes or more in a game twice this season. Once, ironically, was at Nebraska. The only game where they made double-digit threes was North Alabama in December. The ability to basically either defend through or shoot through another team's scoring runs, the ability to make adequate space for those bigs who we know both of them can be the sorts of players who can take over a 5-7 minute stretch of a game. And you can have a stretch. We saw it with Malik Renew at Ohio State, at Illinois. We saw it with Khalil Ware, obviously, late in the season in some of Indiana's wins. I'm thinking about Wisconsin at home. I'm thinking about Minnesota on the road. We know how dominant those bigs could be, but too often Indiana couldn't do enough to give them the space necessary to operate. And then you also kind of consider, not just maybe in the confines of one game what some of those shortcomings did for Indiana, but you also consider essentially how they impacted Indiana's wider standing as a team that, listen, if I told you at the beginning of the season, sight unseen, Indiana was going to go 18-13 and 10-10 in the Big Ten, you'd have probably thought they were somewhere on the bubble. And you would have said, yeah, that kind of makes sense. This team lost a lot. It's pretty young. They're going to need some time to gel. They might kind of come together a little bit later in the season, which they did. But you would have thought they would have been closer to the bubble, I suspect. And in the same way that maybe you could make an argument that Michigan State should have been closer to the bubble in the other direction, that Nebraska game is kind of a tidy look at why Indiana was where it was, because ultimately Indiana, it's not just the record and the wins and losses, though that's part of it. It's also the profile of the team within basically how they were winning and how they were losing. And that's, that wound up reflecting in the numbers, in the profile, et cetera, the kind of team Indiana ultimately was this winter.
And that team lost decisively to Auburn. That team lost decisively to UConn. What was the other third big? They play Kansas really well, but they didn't win the game ultimately. And that, you schedule like that, and Mike Woodson has said that. That's part of his philosophy from day one. He wants to be in these things, and we've got, Kentucky's going to be back on the docket coming up down the stretch as well. Double-edged sword to a degree, yes?
Yeah, let's just go through Indiana's schedule, and let's, here are Indiana's games against teams that either made the NCAA tournament at large or would have if they'd not secured their conference's auto bid. So they lost by 20 to UConn. They lost by 28 to Auburn. They lost by 4 to Kansas. They lost by 16 to Ohio State. They lost by 21 to Purdue, 12 to Wisconsin, 8 to Illinois. They lost by 20 to Purdue, by 4 to Northwestern, by 15 to Nebraska. Then they beat Wisconsin by 4. They beat Michigan State by 1. I'm not trying to be flippant or dismissive or whatever. The committee, sure, you get credit for the way you schedule. And, if you look at Indiana's scheduling numbers, they were 13th overall in strength of schedule this year, according to Kim Pomeroy. I've never fully understood how his non-conference plus his overall kind of jive, because he's got them 218th in the non-conference. I'm just kind of surprised that a weaker than normal Big Ten could pull that number up so much more. But the point is, Indiana gave itself opportunities in the non-conference. It played Connecticut. It played Auburn. It played Kansas. It put those games on its schedule. And even if you look at the games it didn't play, Indiana played, more teams it ranked KenPom 200 or better than it did ranked 250 or worse.
You got to beat somebody.
Indiana even was willing to kind of put some of those kind of tougher guarantee games on its schedule. And there's been, some discussion more widely. I think Scott Van Pelt did a really good piece a few weeks ago, kind of talking about how essentially there's a belief around basketball that the Big 12 figured out that margin of victory and efficiency numbers are you know, crucial components to net rankings. So as a conference, they scheduled a ton of empty calorie filler non-conference games, ran up the scores, improved everybody's net ranking, and then got to a place where whenever the conference, once the conference started to play itself, everybody was playing quad one and two games. So every win was a good win. Few losses were bad losses. You know, nobody's net ranking took too big of a hit as long as they were kind of, you know, staying on the right side of the ledger just enough. And so it caused all boats to rise. Well, Indiana kind of did it the other way. They only beat Wright State by 9. They only beat Morehead State, which in fairness is a tournament team, but they only beat Morehead State by 1. Florida Gulf Coast by 6. Army by 8. You know, let's be fair. I'm not trying to make fun of anybody, but they only beat Louisville by 8. Louisville finished 200th in KenPom this year. So the point is, it's commendable to challenge yourself. It's important to challenge yourself. And I'm not saying that Indiana lost all chance of an at-large bid the day it lost to Kansas. I'm not suggesting if they'd beaten Kansas and done nothing else different on the schedule, they'd be in the tournament right now. But the point is, you have to do something with the non-conference schedule. It still counts for something, both those big games where you have to add some quality, and also, frankly, I mean, I saw – I forget who said this on Twitter. I'm sorry. I see these good points, and then I forget who makes them, and then I steal them, so I don't know what that says about me. But the point is, I saw it on Twitter, and I don't remember who said it. But I thought it was a valid point, which was if Indiana had lost to Florida Gulf Coast, but it had beaten Army, Wright State, Louisville, Harvard, and Morehead State all by 27, Indiana probably would have been a lot closer to the bubble because it would have one bad loss, but it would have traded that for a whole bunch of efficiency improvement. And it's, again, just kind of a reminder that it's not just whether you win, but it's how you win. And probably even to some extent, the idea that while these formulas aren't, you know, set in stone, this stuff does become baked in. And it's a lot harder to improve your net ranking in February than it is in December. So, I mean, you know, these are lessons that ultimately more than anything else, ultimately a bad team has to learn. Like, you know, there's an extent to which, like, we're talking about this stuff as though Indiana, you know, intended to have the season that it had and just didn't realize that if Indiana had been a better team, then some of the, you know, a lot of the stuff would have just happened organically and it wouldn't be something where we're sitting here talking about it in March. But it is stuff that ultimately impacted, you know, where this team wound up in the end.
More with Zach Osterman right around the corner in the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. We'll take a quick timeout and remind you the Crazy Horse Tavern is open daily at 11 a.m. for lunch, dinner, or late night, and we'll have all of your NCAA activity, men's, women's, and otherwise. Indiana women hosting. They will be playing Saturday afternoon at 1:30 against a one-loss Fairfield team in the 4-13 game. And the Hoosiers, if they win, and we hope they do, will be playing Monday as well. That's how the women's tournament works out. So congratulations to Coach Morin and the women, a number 4 seed in the women's NCAA tournament here in Bloomington. If you can't make it to the game, we'll make it to the Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood, as they will have all of the hot food, cold drinks, and everything else to go along with March Madness. More with Zach Osterman from the Indy Star when we come back. It's Glass in the Afternoon. Happy Monday at WGCL. All right, welcome back. Part 2 is Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, putting a bow on Indiana men's basketball, the season ending in Minnesota, the Target Center, where the T-Wolves play. Kevin Warren's parting gift to the league, having the postseason tournaments up in his former neck of the woods. Join us for Pacers basketball tonight, 6:30. They're hosting Cleveland. Boy, oh boy, I leave for a week. Trey Galloway gets hurt. Benedict Mathurin's done for the year. These people should pay me to stay and work. We'll see how the Pacers can handle things. They've been all right so far without Mathurin. They will have the Cavaliers tonight, Mark Boyle, and pregame starts at 6:30. We will tip it shortly after 7 o'clock at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And then the Pacers are on the road since the first and second rounds will be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. That's where you're going to be, right, with the Purdue Boilermakers?
Correct. That will be my primary remit this spring, now that we know Indiana's season is officially over.
Gotcha. And that voice you hear, obviously, is my great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. We recorded this a little bit earlier on a Monday so we could get all of our time commitments put together, and we're talking Indiana basketball. Senior day came with a little bit of a surprise. Trey Galloway and Anthony Leal coming back, or announcing they were coming back. And some interesting words from Anthony Leal telling everybody to relax in the fan base as well. You, I believe, tweeted at some point, maybe we talked about this, maybe we didn't. I think we did talk about it, that Mike Woodson was going to be back. That developed before the spring break activities. And then in the final game of the season, or even on senior day, he reminded everybody who was in charge that Mike Woodson left the season before anybody did, getting ejected with 5 minutes and change to go in that blowout loss to Nebraska. How surprising were the decisions of Misters Leal and Galloway? We can get into a little roster construction as well. And what did we hear from Khalil Ware and Malik Renew following the end of the season? I'm not sure if anybody else would be included in that conversation, but you were the man on the scene. How was the target center, and what did we learn about the end of Indiana's basketball season from a rostering standpoint?
Yeah, so, you know, I think Leal's and Galloway's decisions, you know, I think with the benefit of hindsight, you know, there was that sort of it's probably fair to call it criticism of Mike Woodson sort of saying, I got to go talk to these guys and see where they're at for tomorrow, essentially around senior day. I think we can all look back on that now and probably assume Mike Woodson knew where they were going, and he just wanted both of those guys to get their moment, you know, and didn't want to basically preempt them in terms of those two guys announcing they would be coming back for a COVID-allowed fifth year. And, you know, they were both, I would say, pretty determined. You know, I think Galloway was a little emotional, frustrated, as you can imagine, just because he wanted to play in the tournament and he couldn't do it. But I think it's fair to say both of their both of their sort of outlook, maybe for lack of a better term, was just sort of like the work starts now for next season. And I think we can probably assume that we're talking about Indiana's captains. And I don't know that, you know, I think if you're talking about building blocks for next year, those are good places to start, at least in my opinion, with those two players. So, you know, that you kind of know you have that if you're Indiana. And you mentioned two other guys that I think ultimately I would even maybe throw McKenzie and Baco in this a little bit. It is going to be interesting to see how they navigate the next few weeks. Khalil Ware was the only one that I heard get kind of the direct, you know, are you declaring for the draft? What is your thought process? He said what every player says, what every player should say, which is just, that's not what I'm thinking about right now. I think we can all look at the way his professional stock has elevated in the last few months. And, you know, particularly in a league that values guys that play basketball the way Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama do. I'm not saying he's as good as those players, but, you know, in a league that is very much going to covet players that have that diversity of skill at the five spot in what's perceived to be overall a fairly weak draft, you know, it would probably make sense based on sort of present standing or present kind of position for Khalil Ware to strongly consider leaving for the NBA. I think Malik Renew got the question with a handful of people, including my colleague, Mike Nieslick, who, you know, and he just sort of said, basically, you know, I think someone asked him, do you still want to play at Indiana? He said, yes. But then he also said, you know, I'm not thinking about that right now. I've got to focus on, you know, my team and whatever else, and I'll talk to my family, my people, whatever, you know. I think he said my family.
Is it just an unwritten rule you have to ask?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's kind of one of those where it,
because nobody wants to ask, you just have to ask.
No, and you hate asking, and like, the thing is, in a lot of cases, these kids really haven't considered it that closely.
They've been trying to get in the tournament, right?
Right. Like I'm sure they've thought about it. I'm sure they've talked to their parents about it. But and it's also worth saying in the NIL era, they probably have agents, you know, because that's legal now to have certified agents. So you'll have but that actually in some ways even takes more of that off your plate, because you can just sort of say, hey, like, my agent's going to worry about the NBA side of this, you know, and he or she's going to know what we can do, what we can't do. You know, I know that they're going to be able to go talk to the right people to know that, you know, this will happen, or that, you know, that's the right thing to do, or whatever.
That's why agents are good things.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, genuinely these kids don't think about this stuff at the level. In a broad way, they do. Yeah, they all want to play in the NBA. I mean, sure, of course they do. But, you know, they don't have like a calendar in their locker where they're marking down the days until, you know, they can declare. It just doesn't work that way. But I think with Renew and with Mbako, I think that, you know, there will be questions about, like, for example, would you declare? Would you go through the process, just get some feedback, see where things stand? You know, both players, if they went into the portal, would obviously be, you know, would probably garner significant attention. That doesn't, you know, I say this every year, going into the portal does not mean a player is gone by any means. I'm not predicting anything. Nobody's whispered anything into my ear. It's just my sort of saying, you know, this, where basically we're going to have to sort of figure out the first, now that you know Galloway and Leal are back, the first step, big step of the offseason is figuring out kind of what you have and where things stand regarding that front court. You know, Ware, Renew, and Mbako. Those are your three leading scorers this season. They were the three, I would argue, most important players in terms of, you know, kind of, again, their ability to either take over a game or be that key mismatch or whatever it was. You know, you're talking about, if we're sitting here and breaking them down individually, your best rebounder, your best three-point shooter, certainly your best free throw shooter. And Mbako, you know, far and away finished as Indiana's best free throw shooter. You know, probably your biggest sort of volume scorers in Ware and Renew, et cetera. That's what you got to figure out next if you're Indiana, because I think that's going to inform a lot of what you do, both in terms of those individual players. Like, hey, if Khalil Ware wants to come back, well, then, you know, that's an enormous need that you'd probably fill in the portal that you don't need to anymore. But if, you know, if he does want to leave, then, for example, I think you need to have a serious conversation about, you know, what your next steps are with Malik Renew, because, you know, Renew is kind of a, you know, he's a player with a lot of talents, and he's also a player that, you know, is a little bit at the moment, and this is, again, where maybe you have a conversation about his development path going forward, sort of stuck between the four and the five, particularly defensively. So would you need Malik Renew to do a certain, you know, would you need a certain kind of player to play with Malik Renew or whatever? My point is, we can go on and on with this. Indiana's just kind of, I think the next step is to get certainty around those players.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, getting us all figured out on what Indiana is possibly going to do or not do moving forward. I think those big pieces obviously are going to be the cornerstone of what goes on here. But what is the timeline moving forward so people have an idea? The portal opened today, yesterday, next week. How does this all work anymore?
So the portal open in terms of, you know, we've talked about this before. You can declare your intention to enter the transfer portal, but, you know, the portal opens, like, properly. You can submit your paperwork. You are in the portal. It's legal for other teams to contact you. Like, you are in the portal in the way that, like, you know, the sort of average fan would think a player's in the portal, if you understand what I'm saying. That began today. It began this morning. I think it's still 60 days. I can't remember if they've shortened the spring portal when I could Google it, but
it's not the end of the world. It's going to take a while. Right.
The point is, what you're going to have in the, what you are going to have in the next few days is a tidal wave of players going into the portal. There will be some big names, you know, some really sort of like eye-catching names, players with really impressive scoring averages, or guys that, you know, maybe were, you know, really talented players, you know, really, really, really good players on teams that didn't make the tournament. Obviously, you won't necessarily see teams or players, excuse me, that that are in the tournament that they won't be declaring. But I'm thinking about, you know, I mean, like, for example, if Indiana had a player that wanted to go into the portal, they'd more or less be free to do it at this point because the season's over. Everyone's kind of, you know, able to sort of take the breath and go their own way and do whatever they're prepared to do, et cetera. The next few days, by and large, will be white noise. And what I mean by that is there will just be an enormous tonnage of players moving into the portal. And you'll see a lot of tweets that will say, so-and-so has heard from these 12 schools already. And there may even be some players who maybe they've got a connection. Maybe Kenya Hunter knows a guy that went in the portal or something like that. So, you know, maybe somebody will get a visit set up. Again, I'm just using Indiana as a hypothetical here. This is not me sort of trying to, you know, silently nod toward anything. But, like, let's say a really good player from a mid-major goes in the portal and he's got a good relationship with Yasir Roseman. Well, you might see him go ahead and set up an Indiana visit, you know, because some guys go in the portal with a decent idea of what they're looking for and how to move quickly through that process. Some guys just kind of know they want to go in and they want to get in there, put their name out, see what interest they get. They will have to move more quickly than a high school recruit would, but, you know, they'll still take a little bit more time. And so when I say like these first few days are kind of white noise, it's because there's just going to be a lot of guys going into the portal, and it will take a few days for both sides, players and coaching staffs, to sort out, these are our needs, these are our targets, these are the guys where there's mutual interest, and then you start paring it down. You know, I've compared recruiting to the way Indiana handles sorority rush before, you know, 19 party or whatever it is, and then 12, and then 8, and then 5, and 3. I forget what all the layers are. It's been long enough now that I think I can be forgiven for getting what the exact sorority rush process.
Well, I was just impressed you knew in the beginning. Let's put it that way.
That will happen in maybe – that's a more apt comparison possibly to kind of what's going to happen here with the portal in terms of, you know, there's going to be a lot of players going in. There's going to be a lot of interest expressed in those players in the broadest possible terms. And then slowly but steadily, those names will kind of be whittled down, if you understand what I'm saying. And then, of course, it's also worth remembering, you know, some of these players who are currently in the NCAA tournament will eventually, you know, get knocked out of the NCAA tournament. And they will go into the portal. They're just not going to do it while, you know, I don't know. I'm just like pick a team, you know, Morehead State, I don't know, has a guy that I'm just looking again at Indiana's schedule. Morehead State's got a guy that had a really good year. Well, he's not going to go in the portal while his team is preparing for the NCAA tournament. But let's assume they get knocked out on Thursday. He might go in the portal over the weekend. So what you'll have is a really big number here. And then, you know, it will just kind of keep getting added to as teams are knocked out of the tournament. And it will be, in the majority of cases, at least a few days before we start getting clarity on, you know, where, who is targeting whom and who's a priority for what. And, you know, maybe even to some extent kind of what positions or skill sets different teams are prioritizing and where things are going from there.
Are you selling a vision in the portal, or are you just trying to grab all you can before another guy jumps in there? How would you want to put this together if you were running the roster, if you were the general manager of Indiana basketball? Do you play the cards you're dealt, Or do you try to do something new? Let's say, where's going? Do we finally get away from the too big offense that's kind of bogged down things and isn't really the modernist version of college basketball? Or if a couple bigs say, well, you put Trayce Jackson-Davis and Khalil Ware into the NBA threshold, I want to go there too. How does that all work?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I would expect that Indiana, and this is where I kind of come back to Malik Renew and the difficulty. Like, one of the underpinnings of Mike Woodson's three teams in Indiana was a true five who could rebound at, you know, huge volume, real efficiency, and could also protect the rim. You know, was a genuinely sort of like impactful rim protector. And if you look at, obviously, you know, the player Trayce Jackson-Davis was last season, you know, he was just to use kind of, I guess, to give people a sense for, he was the number nine in terms of percentages or rebounding rates. He was the number nine offensive rebounder in the Big Ten and the number one defensive rebounder in the Big Ten in league games last season. He was also the number two, number two in the conference in block rate in Big Ten games. Khalil Ware, not quite as impactful, still number one in the conference in defensive rebound rate, number 16 in offensive rebound rate, and number four in block rate. So the point is, both of these guys gave you some, and then of course both players were pretty much your focal points in the screen and roll game. You know, if you go back and look, Indiana, it's not like Indiana never used Malik Renew in the screen and roll game. But Ware, like Trayce Jackson-Davis, in the same way that Indiana didn't use a ton of Race Thompson in the screen and roll, they used him some, but Trayce Jackson-Davis was very much their sort of high, their ball screen offense big man. Khalil Ware was the same way. Malik Renew is a good big. I'm not trying to do him down at all. He is not as impactful or consistent of a rebounder or a rim-protecting presence, and in fairness to him, some of that's down to size. He's just not as big as Ware or as long as Jackson-Davis. Maybe you could – I guess it's a little bit both ways. He's not quite as long as Ware either, and he's not necessarily quite so filled out as Jackson-Davis. Now, obviously, he can continue to add weight. He can continue to get stronger, and Trayce Jackson-Davis, to sort of further the example, was a very different player statistically as a sophomore than he was as a senior in terms of his defensive ability. But it has been, I would argue, pretty clear for some time now that Mike Woodson feels like he needs that, you know, that true big at the five spot, particularly on defense. And so I think the question is less about whether you need to go get that player and more about what Malik Renew's future is. Do you think Malik Renew can turn into that kind of player? Not necessarily, you know, 7'2" with an insane wingspan, but just solid, dependable, consistent, rebounding the ball and protecting the rim without fouling, because obviously fouls have continued to kind of be a problem for him. You know, it seemed like he cut them down a little bit this season, but, like, you know, again, you look at his numbers last year, they're still better than they were a year ago, but, you know, 4.8 fouls per 40 minutes, or 4.6 fouls committed per 40 minutes in Big Ten play, 5 fouls per 40 minutes committed against Tier A opponents in KenPom. Those are still not great numbers for a guy you would need, in theory, to be on the floor for a lot of minutes.
And the bad thing about those fouling numbers, so, it's the kind of fouls. It's just that was the
growth. Sure, but the point is, one way or the other, he's getting in foul trouble.
My point was, I was hoping he would grow more.
That anchor piece at the five defensively, based on the way we've seen Mike Woodson build his teams. The question is, do you think that can be Malik Renew? Because if not, then you've got to find somebody to play alongside him. But if you do that, then you are committing to some of these two big lineups that have at times become undeniably clunky and predictable offensively.
Zach Osterman, the Indy Star, joining us. And that was kind of the development side of Renew. It's like, stop fouling 30 feet away from the basket. Stop reaching on guys on drives. It's just, you should be, at the end of your second year, you should know better than you can't help the team sitting on the bench, and some of that doesn't have to do with the shot blocking or otherwise. It just was indisciplined defense. So Indiana had warts, plenty of them. We'll see how they move through the portal, and that will be interesting to see how it moves and moves along with it. Do you expect any staff turnover, any changes there? Sometimes after difficult seasons, we sometimes will shake things up in different ways. What is your crystal ball pointing for the staff moving forward as well?
Yeah, I don't want to say I would be surprised if there's no turnover. I just think in general, like in modern college basketball, 3 years is not a short amount of time to keep a staff together. To be able to, and I mean, I'm trying to remember, who was Brian Walsh a full assistant on Mike Woodson's first staff?
No, I believe he was moved up.
Who was the third assistant? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
Walsh was here with Archie, and he started
in the Dobo role.
Right. Well, Calbert Chaney, Jordan Halls, all those guys are new, so somebody's had to have left in that time.
I'm struggling to remember who. Yeah, because Walsh was listed as team and recruiting coordinator. Somebody left off that, and for the life of me, I can't think of who it was. It was Dane Fife. That's who it was. So the point is, we have seen staff turnover under Mike Woodson already. 3 years is not now it's not like if you're there more than 3 years, like your career is stalling or anything like that. But 3 years is that's a long time to be in one place in a business where you're kind of expected to move. You're expected to kind of, progress from sort of stop to stop and pick up different pieces from different coaches. And I mean, geez, if you're a coach like Kenya Hunter, who's been at NC State now, been at Georgetown, been at Nebraska, been at UConn, been with all these different, I think he was at Xavier, been under all these different coaches and worked with a lot of these different players. Like at some point, frankly, you should probably, if you want it, and some guys don't, I guess, but, I think I can make you a credible case. Kenya Hunter should be mentioned as a name for some head jobs before too long. So the point is, it wouldn't shock me to see some staff turnover. I don't think that's necessarily a guarantee, but if it comes, I don't know that it's necessarily a sign of some sort of impending disaster. Like I've always thought turning over your staff, as long as it didn't become too volatile or too much happened at once, I've always thought turning over your staff wasn't always the worst thing in the world.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, checking in today before he heads up to Indianapolis. What's your schedule up there, buddy? Are you Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday?
I think they're Friday, Sunday.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And obviously you will be with the Purdue Boilermakers for the IndyStar.com. As far as they take you, Purdue's path will be what? Indy Detroit, so you don't have a ton of frequent flyer miles to rack up.
No, yeah, it would be pretty nearby early on. I mean, it was one of those years where I think for a while it looked like, and I know Arizona ultimately faded. They wound up a 2 seed. For a while, it looked like we were going to get the rare sort of like clean regional division in terms of UConn getting the East, Purdue the Midwest, Houston the South, and Arizona the West. Obviously, I think North Carolina wound up with that last 1 seed. If I'm not mistaken. So it winds up getting a little, the apple cart got upset a little bit. By the way, Arizona finished the season, but, it in general, a lot of the, I'd say 3 of your 1 seeds got probably exactly the path they would have preferred.
And North Carolina is your disruptor out West. That's the had to move somebody out there as Arizona faded into the two line on all of that. Well, we wish you safe travels. I know you don't have far to go, and we'll get caught up with you as this week and next continues. I got a short week this week because here on WGCL we bring you annually tournament action, the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament, the entire first and second round starting at noon on Thursday and ending when that final gun goes off on Sunday night. That's over 12 hours a day of college hoops, so you'll be tuned in with us, and we'll try to get Zach Osterman back on once he gets settled in with the Boilermakers at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Thanks so much for your time, my man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
That's Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Don't forget, stick around. Pacer basketball coming up. Pregame with Cleveland from that same Gainbridge Fieldhouse starts at 6:30 tonight. Have a great Monday night.